Welcome to Unity Fort Worth Online. We are a spiritual center of love and wisdom, affirming God's presence in our lives and reaching the larger community in ever-increasing circles of good.
All right. Gently come forth from that time, and we're going to talk about gems from the Gospel of Thomas today, and we've got 10 gems we're going to look at, 10 sayings. The whole of the Gospel of Thomas is 114 sayings, so we're doing about a tithe of them, a tenth of them. They're really, really cool, by the way, if you haven't read the Gospel of Thomas before. You know, we're familiar, aren't we, with the regular Gospels? You know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, okay? But this Gospel was hidden till 1945, and that's a long time, you know, from the early days, the early times after Jesus passed, all the way to 1945, we didn't know about this gospel. And then some laborers were working outside of a village in Nag Hammadi in Egypt, and they came across some vessels that contained manuscripts. They took the manuscripts out. They were in the ancient language of Coptic, ancient Egyptian language, and they sent them to the university to be analyzed. They found that they were gospels of the same time, the same provenance as Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. In other words, they were written between 70 and 100 AD, around the same time as Matthew. And they contain in them, these Gospels, especially the Gospel of Thomas, a lot of the same sayings that you find in the other Gospels, but you also find them said in a different, more interestingly metaphysical way, and also some unique features. And so I want to discuss some of these today because they are fascinating in their illumination of Jesus. Because so much of Jesus is hidden under later editorializing. And even the gospel writers themselves kind of editorialize, right? Matthew was speaking to the Jews, so everything's biased in that way. Luke was speaking to the Greeks and the Romans, and so it's in that regard. John wanted to show that Jesus was the one great divinity, so everything is in that regard. What's cool about the sayings gospel of Thomas is it's just that. It's just his sayings. There's nobody editorializing about it. It's just what he said, right? So we get this understanding of what he is really at pains to teach us. And I would suggest he's coming through as a great wisdom teacher, right? Almost like a Zen master. Very, very aphoristic, very short and sweet. It's not a very long book, but it's profound. There's powerful things in it. And the message that's coming through all the way through the book is very simple but profound. It says, look clearly, you know, because we're so used to looking superficially, aren't we? We divide and conquer. We see them and us. But if you look clearly, you find that there's no them and us. There's simply us. We're all breathing the same air, right? Once we look beyond the surface of things, we recognize that we are intimately connected. There's no real division. And once you look clearly, you find that the truth is right under your nose, right? It's here. It's everywhere. It is the Spirit through, moving in and through everything. That's another huge teaching of this. When we understand this, we are called to do something profound, and that is let go of everything else. Let go of all your worries around thinking that everything needs to stay divided, because it doesn't. Once you're in that oneness, you are free, right? You are free to express love much more purely because you're not trying to separate it out. My love and your love and your love and as good as my love, etc. You know, the way we go. Or it overcomes political divisions because I can see that somebody that doesn't agree with me politically is still okay. They're not devil incarnate because they didn't vote the my way. No, we're all in this together, right? Because ultimately, there is only one of us here. This is the message going all through this. When you realize this truth, you see, then you're free. The first statement we're going to read tells us about this. Let's get stuck in, shall we? Any questions immediately, first of all, about the book? Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. So it's being, you know, it took church history, what, four centuries to decide who or what was going into the New Testament in the first place? Council of Nicaea and various other councils. So why can't we have another council that says, hey, this is a great book, let's bring it in? You know, it's no real law that says it only has to be these 27 books, right? Why should it be that way? If we find greater wisdom, then we can bring it on board. And many of the Gospels, you know, that they were written never made it in because the councils didn't want them. You know, the famous one, the Gospel of Duane, you know, that never made it in. Duane tried real hard to get his gospel into the New Testament. Didn't work. I don't know what they had against Duane, but anyway. So number two, this is the second saying. It says, Jesus said, the seeker should not stop until he finds. And that sounds just like the gospels that we know, right? Seek and you shall find. But then it goes on. It says, when he does find, he will be disturbed. I like that. After he has been disturbed, he will be astonished. Then he will reign over everything. Wow. So it takes it a little further than just seek and you'll find. It tells you what's next. After you found something, you're disturbed. Why are we generally disturbed when we find some new information? It shakes us out of our comfort zone, doesn't it? It gives us new understanding, so we're kind of disturbed. Wait a minute. Maybe there's more going on than just the superficial, right? There's deeper information here. It shakes up our ego. It shakes us out of our comfort place. It seems to be opposite. You know, when the world says everything's divided and you divide and conquer and money is the most important thing, when somebody teaches, no, the abundance of God is the most important thing, trust that. Yeah, we're not divided, we are one in spirit. That goes opposite the way we've been living our lives. So it's disturbing. And if we persist in our disturbance, we will become astonished. Because it's like, wow, there's something greater than what I've been believing in. Yeah, so disturbance and astonishment are an important part of the spiritual path. If you're not disturbed, you're probably not on the path. That's why we love unity, because we're all disturbed, aren't we? We don't have to move up the highway to up 287. We're just disturbed right here. And then astonished. I love astonished because it's that awesomeness, you know. Sometimes I'll look down the street. Yesterday I was just doing some wedding thing, and I was busy with something. My car wouldn't work. It was a minor thing, but it wouldn't work. And so a lot of hassles. And I had to get to somewhere, and I looked out at the light on the Burnett Plaza building, and it was gorgeous, and I took a photo of it. And it was cool because right in the midst of all the hassles, God was shining some light there, and it was lovely, and I captured it, and I put it up on Facebook, you know, because we're doing this black and white pictures. So I took a black and white picture, and I thought there's a lesson there, is that in the middle of everything, you can still be astonished. You can still be, wow. Open and receptive, because if you can do that in any circumstance, then you will reign over everything. You'll no longer be a victim of it. You will be a master of it. And don't we all want to do that? We all want to be masters instead of victims, yes? Not ego masters, but masters because we are letting Spirit express. I love that one. That's the first one. And it's all about persistence too, isn't it? You got to keep doing this. Don't be a fine... We're the friend of it, and I was told in seminary that we were supposed to comfort the afflicted. That was part of the role of a minister, but also we were supposed to afflict the comfortable. And you know, a true teaching will do both. It will comfort us when we truly need it, but it will also have the courage to move us out of our comfort zone. Second one is 5. It says, Jesus said, recognize what is right in front of you, and that which is hidden from you will be revealed. Nothing hidden will fail to be displayed. And he talks about hidden things quite often. I believe the spiritual path is an open secret. You know what I'm saying? It's always there, but until we're ready for it, we don't see it. Have you noticed this? Like, now I get it. Well, where's it been? It's always been there. It's just I wasn't attuned to it. It's like falling in love. Oh, my God, I'm falling in love for the first time. I never knew this could exist. Well, it's always been there. Just the right and perfect time was there for it to express itself for you. And I think this is what he's saying here. It's always right under our noses, yeah? It's available. It's an open secret. How do we become aware of it then? If it's always here, why do we miss it? Yeah, we're not paying attention. We don't think we're worthy to receive. See? That's a huge thing. I'm worthy to receive. Say that to yourself. I am worthy to receive. Yeah? Not from my ego, but from my spirit. I'm worthy to live this expanded life. Yeah? That's huge. You can't claim it if you're scared of it, if you don't want it. Okay to be disturbed and astonished, but you still got to bring the disturbance and astonishment on. I'm claiming it. All right, that's 2. 13. This is a long one, because they're mostly very short. Jesus asked his disciples, make a comparison. Who am I like? And he says this, asked this question in all the Gospels. Simon Peter replied, you are like a righteous messenger. That's not bad, is it? Matthew replied, you are like an intelligent lover of wisdom. Okay. Thomas replied, teacher, I cannot possibly say what you're like. Now, who was closer? Thomas was, right? Because the others had a concept about who Jesus was. Thomas said, wow, it's just overwhelming to me, you know? It's like somebody trying to explain, oh, I'm in love. Let me tell you what it's like. You can't. You're either in love or you're not, right? You can't describe it. And Jesus understood Thomas was closer because it was no longer in his head. It had moved to his heart. And he said to Thomas, I am not your teacher. You have drunk from and become intoxicated from the bubbling water that I poured out. Wow. I don't need to be your teacher anymore. You are your own teacher. You have found the stream and the fountain of truth, right, within your own being. And Jesus took Thomas and they withdrew. Jesus said 3 things to him. When Thomas returned to the other disciples, they asked him, hey, what'd he tell you? Because we always want to know, don't we? Thomas replied, if I tell even one of the things that he told me, you would pick up stones and throw them at me, and fire would come out of those stones and burn you up. Don't ask, don't tell. So what do you think those 3 sayings were? What did Jesus tell Thomas? Because it doesn't tell us in the Gospels. We have to imagine what it was. You don't want to get burned up. Don't be afraid. It's going to be okay. We are not the disciples. Well, I think he said something like, you're God, you know. And that was the ultimate blasphemy. So if he went back and told the disciples, hey, I'm God, they would have stoned him. And the second thing he might have said was, guess what? We're all God. Everyone's in this together. There's no condemnation, you know. And that's such a radical statement. We want to destroy it. Oh, no, that can't be the truth. It's too radical for our thinking, our dualistic thinking. Powerful, though, isn't it? You got to drink directly of that truth within your own being. What's that? The third what? All right, that's good. I'm God, you're God, and nobody can tell you. You have to find it for yourself, right? And if you're really into somebody telling you that, like, it has to be Jesus, it has to be the Buddha, then we've got a problem here. Because I'm going to hell if I don't believe in that way shower, right? If it's not Jesus. But Jesus is saying, it's not about me. It's about you discovering the truth. You already know. It's already where? Underneath your... You know, at 9:30, I said, it's under your nose. What is under your nose? Somebody says your mustache. Well, no. Oh, ye literal people. We're talking metaphysics here. We're talking the deeper truths, right? What? There we go. Say again. I love that. Yeah, fear and trembling. With disturbance and astonishment. So it's the same idea, isn't it? It's got to be real for me. I got to feel it in my bones. Glory, I'm feeling it moving in me now. Lord of mercy. I've always wanted to be one of those old-timey preachers. No, she shakes her head, you know. It's okay for 5 minutes. I'd be insufferable at home if I did one. Come on, babe. You know what I like. I feel the Spirit don't move. All right, 18. The disciples asked Jesus, tell us about our end. What will it be? And always worrying about that, aren't we? You know, how's it all going to end? And I love what Woody Allen says. He says, I'm not scared of death. I just don't want to be around when it happens. I know that point of view. Tell us about our end. What will it be? Jesus replied, have you found the beginning? Capital B. Have you found the beginning so you now seek the end? The place of the beginning will be the place of the end. Blessed is anyone who will stand up in the beginning and thereby know the end and never die. In other words, trace it back to source, right? Back to the beginning of everything. That's where it is. The truth is, it's at every moment is a new beginning. And if you're going to find the truth, don't try and find the end. Find the beginning. Find this moment, this now moment. Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, great Zen master, said there's two kinds of minds, beginner's mind and expert's mind. In the beginner's mind, there are an infinite amount of possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few, because we've got our mind made up. We think we know everything, right? So become like a beginner. Same idea that he's talking about here, I believe. Say again so we can hear. The seeker is the sought, right? That's what I said in my British accent. I said it. The seeker is the sought. You said the seeker is the sought. I don't know what the heck's going on. But you're right. You know, God, they say you take one step toward God, God takes 100 steps towards you. It takes just a little opening to receive the amazement, right? It's God wants to do this for us. The oneness within us wants us to recognize it. It's waiting patiently for us to open up into this magnificence. 24, his disciples said to him, show us the place where you are, for it is essential for us to seek it. You know, they're always after times and places and things outside, right? He responded, hear as he is, let him hear. There is light within a man of light, and he lights up all the world. If he is not a light, there's darkness. In other words, it's not about where are you and who's doing this. It's find your own light again, right? Find your own bubbling water. Find your light. It's within you. When you found it, you become a being of light. Well, how do you become a being of light in the first place? How do you do that? What? Spend time in the quiet. Create a quiet space where you can allow this to come to you. Because if we're so distracted as we are with everything and sundry, how can we find the place if we're not there, quiet, open and receptive to it, right? Because that's looking closely again. And if we're always got the TV on, it's hard to come to center, you know? Times when it has to be turned off. We love to sit out in our garden, just stare into the trees and into space and experience the beauty. And it always reveals itself to us, you know, that willingness to be present. And you start to feel it. Next one is 42. Very short one. It says, Jesus said, be one of those who pass by. Be one of those who pass by. Now, what's that about? Don't get distracted, right? Detach from all the distractions. Don't get hooked by everything that comes, because sometimes we're going on our way, we're trying to remember the truth, and then we get distracted by this circumstance, that circumstance, I didn't like what they said, that Facebook, dang it, why am I on Facebook, etc. We're pulled in all directions. It's right beneath my nose, is that you said? I got to watch out. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Non-detachment. Non-attachment to the results also, right? Of having to have it a certain way. Can you be a passerby? It doesn't mean indifference to the world. You're still loving everything, but you're not attached to any one particular outcome. That's huge for most of us, I think. If we can release from that, we can be free. Yes. Say it again. Without expectations. Listen, God has already given us everything. It's okay. It's a beautiful place. There's wonders all around us. Yeah, it's just a question of opening to it. Jesus said, if two can make peace between themselves in a single house, they can say to the mountain, move, and it will move. Now, that's good advice for our relationships, isn't it? If we can make peace between two people in a single house, we can say to the mountain, move. But it's also peace between all the warring parts of ourselves. Instead of being divided in our consciousness, if we can come to that peaceful place that Pratiksha's talking about, then anything's possible. We can say, move, and the mountain will move. That's 48. And by the way, we just ordered a bunch of these books. They should be in next week because we had some people asking to get a copy and we forgot to pre-order them, but they'll be in next week. 60. They saw a Samaritan going into Judea carrying a lamb. He asked his disciples, what do you think he will do with the lamb? They replied, he'll kill it and eat it. He said to them, as long as it remains alive, he will not eat it. Only if he kills it and it becomes a corpse. And the disciples replied, duh. They said, otherwise he won't be able to do so. But he said to them, and this is where it gets interesting, you too must seek a place for rest. It's that centeredness again. Or you may become a corpse and be eaten. In other words, you've got to empower yourself by coming to your center, right? Otherwise you become a victim of circumstance. Otherwise you become carrion for all the birds to peck at. Yeah, and there's plenty of those birds out there. They're in us as well. They're all those thoughts and divisions and divisiveness. Find that place. We have a precious human life. Yeah, while you've got life, you are messy and vibrant. When you're dead, you were embalmed, neat and tidy, but all crystallized, right? Which is better? It's better to be messy, isn't it? Because you've got the messiness of life around you. So let's hear it for messy. Let's hear it for juicy. Let's hear it for all those things. Those crazinesses that we are. They're part of our humanness. 72. A man said to him, talk to my brothers so that they will divide my family's property with me. Jesus replied, man, who made me a divider? He turned to his disciples and asked them, really, am I a divider? I love that one because it's very simple. It's very clear teaching, isn't it? I don't want to divide anything. We're all in this together. We are one. If there's any teaching that teaches you, it's not about them and us, right and wrong. There's that teaching. I'm not a divider. I came that we might have life abundantly together, right? We're all worthy. Universal salvation. And the final one, 91. They said to him, tell us where you are so that we can believe in you. Oh, please. They still don't get it, do they? He replied, you analyze the appearance of the sky and the earth, but you don't recognize what is right in front of you, and you don't know the nature of the present time. In other words, it's all about coming home to the now. That's what it is. So, what have you learned? What speaks to you? Anything speak to you that I can say, I'm going to go and practice that? That's powerful. What really rings a bell? Say again. Because there's movement going on. Right. Right. Don't judge it. Whatever's going on, it can be a blessing. Right? No matter what it is. Great. That's a good lesson. Okay, pass on by, not with indifference, but not getting attached to every darn thing. You know, it came to pass. Yes, good. A couple more. Turn off the TV. Okay. Be in the present. Be now. And I'm going to give you a bonus one. It's like that track on the album that wasn't mentioned, but you get the extra one. This is 108. It says, Jesus said, he who drinks from my mouth will become like I am, and I will become him. And the hidden things, again, there's the hidden things will be revealed to him. I love this one. He who drinks from my mouth. Obviously, it's not talking literally, but it's talking intimately, isn't it? It's the idea that he who truly takes to heart my teachings of love and expansiveness, who drinks from my mouth, right, who partakes of the same living essence, will become like I am, and I will become him. Now, that's total brotherhood and sisterhood, isn't it, in the understanding of we are all the Christs. And Jesus wants to pour it out to us, yeah? His message is that. This is good news. I came that you might have life and have it abundantly. It is your Father's good pleasure. Fear not, little flock, he says in Luke. It is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom of expanded good and possibility. It's here now. Amen.
Thank you for listening. This ministry is funded through the generous contributions of individuals just like you. If you have found spiritual enrichment here, please visit us online at www.unityfortworth.org and make a donation. We thank you for your contribution and affirm with you, divine love flowing through us blesses and multiplies all that we give and all that we receive.